in and welcome to Keep It Close to Me, subsection, category, comics rule everything around me. Look, it's podcasts that I do. We talk about things. This one specifically, when we're talking about things we like, talking about comics. I'm Chris, I'm your podcast pal, and with me today to talk about comics, as has been for, I think, basically every episode of this show, is my good friend Matt Drain. How you doing, Matt?
Doing very well.
How did the eclipse treat you?
It was awesome.
Tell me, let's talk about that. Since I walked out into my driveway for a second and was like, looks like there's kind of an eclipse going on. All right, I got to get to work. It's like, all right, I got stuff to do.
Were you able to see it? Like,
yeah, we had some glasses, and I think I told you that April had kind of planned a trip around it. Mm-hmm. And I was going to try to go to that, but then didn't work out. But then she also wasn't able to go because she got sick. And so it was basically just became like, well, guess I'll go out in the driveway and see what I was also part of me was kind of just like, I was very into the idea of like, if I could go somewhere and like really get to have an experience about it, you know, like go somewhere that's like, well, talk about what you did.
So I've got a 10-year-old son named Thomas who he all summer has been super into it. He's been watching science YouTube videos about it and he's been trying to learn a lot about it because he's really into it. And so I decided pretty early in the summer that we were going to drive to wherever in the country would be the best place to see it, which is actually pretty close for us. We're in Memphis and what they call the line of totality where it is at its
best. Sounds so cool.
Past down through Kentucky and over north Nashville. And so, about 3.5 hours away. So we planned a road trip. My brother, who lives in Colorado, flew in because he wanted to see it.
That is a real commitment to the eclipse.
My brother, he's crazy about science. He works for a company. He does computer programming for space satellites. Like, that's his deal. So all astronomical. So
this is right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah, he was all about it. So, and in fact, he's the one that mapped out, here's where we need to drive to, here's where we need to go. We had also planned on going to Nashville, but heard the traffic in Nashville was just going to be so nightmarishly bad that we planned.
Because of the huge influx of people.
Yeah. I don't know when the last time you had to pass through Nashville was. Traffic in Nashville in the last 3 or 4 years has been terrible anyway. Just the city's grown by about 1.5 million people. And
oh, wow.
And the road infrastructure can't handle that. And more people keep moving there. And
if you had asked me beforehand, or I'm sure any of the listeners who were like, let's listen to this comic podcast. And they're going like, I wonder if I will get any info on, Nashville's traffic and infrastructure problem.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff you can only get on this show.
That's right. That's keep it close to me.
The special. Wildly out of nowhere, like, did not see that coming. The kind of surprises.
So anyway, we said we're not doing Nashville. We drove due north up into Kentucky. We went to a state park there. I don't remember the name of it, but it was just right in the path to where, you still need to wear the glasses as the moon's passing in front of the sun. But then when it reaches totality, it's totally covered. You have about 2.5 minutes where you can take the glasses off and it looks amazing. It looks
just
like what you see.
Stare at it to your heart's content.
The pictures of where it's just perfectly right. And the whole park, it got dark out like it was nighttime. You could see stars and stuff. It was wild. It was wild.
Oh, wow.
It was a really cool experience.
We did not get that here. Right. Even when it was sort of like full on eclipse, we never got like, it was also kind of overcast here.
Yeah.
It was like in and out overcast. And at one point I was inside sort of looking out and I was like, is it eclipse out there or is it just cloudy?
Right. My wife said the cloud cover made it hard to really even see much of anything.
But I finally, like at one point I did go out. But so that was the thing. It's like if we had had like something like you, if we'd been able to do something like you did, I would have been all about it. But once I knew we weren't going to be able to do something like that, I was just kind of like, all right, eclipse, whatever. You know, like I went out and I was like, I saw it for a second and it was like maybe 45% right. or some, you know, 60% maybe. I don't know. I was just like,
Well, cool. In 7 years, there'll be the next one. And I think it will come closer, even closer to here than this last one did.
Okay.
So definitely make a point.
I thought it was going to be another 80 years or something. I was like, well, I guess I missed my chance, whatever.
I don't know. So yeah, I definitely recommend if you have a chance to see if the totality, what they call that line of totality, is anywhere near you, it's worth the trip because it's just
super
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, really cool.
Well, so none of that has anything to do with comics, other than the fact that seemed like I'm sure that eclipses like that have certainly been the plot for several comic storylines over the years. Something that sort of, we talked about this a little bit, and we're not going to, some of the stuff, this will be, we'll do some spoilers in here at some point, but we'll let you know, hopefully ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Several of the comic things, for some reason, several of the comic things I think we wanted to talk about today feel like an eclipse type thing like this, especially one that was like predicted, you know, what was it, 83 years ago or something? Whenever they predicted when this one was going to happen.
Oh, no, they've known for over 100 years. Like, oh, okay. They're able to predict out. Yeah, anyway.
I just remember seeing something like a headline from a newspaper, you know, from...
Right. Well, yeah, the last one was in 1970-something, and they knew it'd be...
Well, this Monday. Was even... Yeah. This was way further back than that. Okay. And they were like, we know that this one will be on August, you know, like the exact date, 2017 or whatever.
Yeah.
And, but I was thinking about, like, those, this kind of, like, seems very comic book, but it's like, I can imagine this sort of playing a part into several of the comics we were planning on talking about. I guess it just, maybe I should have been more into it. Maybe I should have been looking at it sort of more through that lens of, boy, this is a real rare, weird thing. I think I was partially just kind of bummed out that I wasn't able to do something. Like, that was my coping mechanism, was to be right. Like, oh, who cares?
Yeah, whatever.
Dumb eclipse.
I don't care.
Because literally, like, I just went out there, was like, all right, there it is. And I'm going to go get back to doing what I need to do.
Yeah.
But we got a number of comics and didn't really have anything. We're not very focused with like a very specific comic or comics we want to talk about. Kind of just want to talk about stuff we've been into lately. But we had stuff to talk about just to give you guys an idea. I guess this is kind of like a preview of some of the stuff we're hopefully going to talk about. Mr. Miracle number one. And this certainly... This, like, a weird big eclipse moment certainly seems like something that could fit in with that story. That new DC Metal, I guess, miniseries, event, whatever you want to call it, certainly feels like that's the kind of thing. There may even be, I can't remember now, I just read some of this stuff recently and I already don't remember. It's like, it feels like you could tell me there was like, oh yeah, there's a big eclipse in that. And I'd go like, oh sure, yeah, no, yeah. I remember that. and that's not like a... You know, that's not like a slam on the book that I don't remember. It's just like a lot of stuff happens in a lot of comics and we're reading things and it's a lot to keep up with. Maybe you have a better time with it, but
it's a blur to me.
I remember like, yeah, I remember sort of like big details and moments and, you know, sort of like the things that make me just go like, oh, wow. Or like, oh boy. And then everything else can kind of just start to run together. But, we got that. Secret Empire. You've been reading a lot of Batman, you said.
Been reading a lot.
I feel Batman. Like, well, and didn't, there's like, I feel like with that Batman stuff, everything with Batman, I'm still always kind of like putting it through the filter of, how does it relate to the Grant Morrison Batman stuff? And especially since, oh man, maybe I shouldn't say this because this might be spoiling it for you. that sounds too vague. Now you're gonna be like, what? your brain's going to be working overtime trying to figure out what I'm talking about. Yeah, I'll just not say anything on that part. But there was like, what was it in Batman... and like the return of Bruce Wayne after he had died in Final Crisis. Seems like there was an eclipse in Final Crisis. Maybe it was just that the skies were red. I don't know. But it seems like, I feel like I remember there being something to do with an eclipse in Return of Bruce Wayne also, when he was like traveling through time and like got Batman at the...
I did love that story though. Caveman, Batman, and
Pilgrim Batman, Pirate Batman. Yeah. Loved that. But it's one of those things where it's like, all just kind of like, I remember like specific pages, but like sort of the entirety of the story. I'm super both jealous and impressed by people who are able to really keep all of these details very like compartmentalized and like, I remember exactly what issue that happened in and like how this, you know, blah, blah, blah. I just feel like, you know, so much of this stuff, it would be so easy to like imagine eclipse things happening as part of the big, you know, event of it all.
Remember that TV show Heroes? They had an eclipse at the beginning of that, and that's how they got their powers.
Or yeah.
It was somehow related Something. To that, and they had to save the cheerleader.
I never watched that show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was like, I remember people being into that show when it came out and being like, oh, you must love this, right? And I was like, eh. You know, it's like these, some of the, so much of the stuff that I would, you know, I would like see it over at somebody else's house for a little bit, or, you know, I'd watch an episode and mm-hmm. just be like, yeah, I remember this from comics.
Yeah.
It's like, this happened, this is like, I know this is new to you because right. you don't read comics, but it's like, this is the kind of thing I've seen multiple times.
Right. There's better options out there now. Maybe it kind of hit the scene before the quite the saturation of superhero yeah. stuff we have now, but yeah, you've got better choices. If you never saw Heroes, you're
there's
okay.
no need. There's no need to go back and bother with it. Well, let's talk about Mr. Miracle a little bit.
Sounds good.
While we're there. We're only one issue in.
Yeah.
Now, did you ever read the original, like the old, like Jack Kirby Mr. Miracle series? Or any of what's
fourth
your back,
world
what's,
stuff?
What's your background with Mr. Miracle?
Yeah, I've only read a little bit of the original Jack Kirby Fourth World stuff. I've never just sat down and tried to read that whole thing. So
Opus.
Yeah.
That whole just yeah.
That ran through several different books but told yeah. one giant epic story. And so I've only read like bits and pieces of that and then lots of where DC's thrown back to it over the years. Mr. Miracle.
Did you read that Seven Soldiers, Mr. Miracle?
No.
That Grant Morrison
Yeah,
did?
I didn't read Seven Soldiers. That's one of the Grant Morrison books I never read. You know, so he was...
might have been an eclipse in there somewhere.
It might have been. He was involved in the last arc of Geoff Johns' Justice League, the Dark Side War.
Mm-hmm.
Had him,
yeah.
him, Scott and Barda in it, which is one of the things that was a little bit jarring about Mr. Miracle number one, because that's when we last saw them. But it doesn't really jive with where right. that book left them. So, you know, whatever. Whether it's just set in a different something.
Yeah, it's this book. I mean, it's sort of, it has the look of being like a, just a sort of normal continuity book. But it's like, it has some of the trappings of being just like, oh, this is Mr. Miracle. But it's also, it has that sort of like Vertigo or like Young Animal. Like yes. Sort of, it's.
I could have seen it have that Young Animal stamp on it.
Yeah, easy. And it'd be like totally its own thing, and maybe that would be better for it. But of course, we don't know where they're going with it. This may end up being like straight into the main Rebirth right. universe. I don't know how, but
I remember when his Vision book at Marvel was coming out. It didn't fit neatly into what Marvel was doing with Vision over in Avengers. But the book is so good, you're just like, it doesn't matter. Maybe yeah. it'll fit when it comes out, or we can just insert it into the timeline wherever it would have fit. Like,
or just let's not worry about it.
Yeah, don't be a slave to that. And so that's probably how Mr. Miracle will be. Yeah, he's probably
that's kind of what I was imagining. Like going into that first issue, I was like, don't worry about anything else around it. Mm-hmm. Just focus on what this story is. But anyway.
But that was one hurdle to overcome, that Geoff Johns had left them as a couple in a very specific place.
Mm-hmm.
They'd separated at the end of that Justice League story. And then Mr. Miracle, they're together. Not everything's fine, but as far as their relationship status. So that's just one of those that scratches that continuity thing in your brain to see how does that fit.
Yeah. But didn't that Dark Side War took place before Rebirth?
Yes, right. So, that was the last thing before Rebirth.
Yeah. So I just kind of would go like basically anything pre-Rebirth, with the exception of, you know, some of like, you know, like maybe like the Batman stuff that's like direct mm-hmm. carryover. I'm just going like, yeah, I'm just can pretend it didn't happen, or like I don't have to worry about what right. happened. I'm just kind of going like, wherever this is from here is what I'm paying attention
right.
to. And whether or not that's, you know, sort of their intention is up for debate as, you know, from book to book maybe. But, so what did you think?
Man, it was really, really different. A different kind of comic, which if you read a lot of comic books, that's refreshing. Like it's just a different type of story framed really differently, told really differently. That part was refreshing. The story itself, we're spoiling it, right?
Yeah, let's go ahead and say some spoilers for this. But there's kind of not much to spoil because it's just one issue. If you haven't read it yet, by all means, read it. It's I mean, I guess there's some stuff. I mean, unless you are really, there's some things you might be, some people might be really sensitive to.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I thought there's, so the second page of the book is the spoiler that I was thinking of.
So here's some, we'll just go ahead and say spoilers. But I think there's no way to even warn people about sort of like what you might be sensitive to without kind of spoiling some of the stuff.
Self-harm, sensitive, triggery stuff.
Yeah. Which, yeah, if that stuff, but also, I mean, it's kind of like, if I was sensitive to some of those things, I feel like I would be this, like, this could be a story so for you.
Be cathartic or...
Or something where it's like, you know, this clearly seems like it's coming from a place of, I don't know, Tom King is, I'm very interested kind of in everything he writes, because it seems, even the stuff that's like very, seems sort of like the Batman stuff. Well, I don't know, man. He's putting stuff about that in Batman too. It's like, this is clearly like a recurring theme for him. Something that maybe he is dealing with, you know.
Well, no, he is dealing with some stuff. I know he had I can't remember what it was in. I sent you a link to an article that he was in talking about it. Batman and Mr. Miracle Report came out, and he was being just real about some stuff. He was going, mental health stuff he was dealing with, and that being kind of an outlet for him, that I think, you know, part of his rise to popularity was real quick for him, and having to deal with the pressure of that, and there were some real anxiety issues, and you can see that on the page.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that, I mean, that's right at the very beginning of the book, is a suicide attempt, and it's rough. That's a rough way to start. I don't know what I expected going in, but it wasn't that. and that sets the tone for the whole rest of the book, dealing with that. And then there's strange moments in the book that make you wonder, how did that affect the world? Stuff like there's a character who's been long dead that's just hanging out with him like it's no big deal. Oberon. He's hanging out with
Who is like an original character. He's a character from the original Mr. Miracle. Like that. I mean, he's, and so a little bit of background on Mr. Miracle, because I have read like all that Fourth World stuff. Like I love all that stuff. And also then they put, leading up to, of course, Jack Kirby's 100th birthday is coming up next week, or is it this week? It's the 28th. Is coming up, and so DC has been doing like a bunch of Jack Kirby related stuff.
Marvel's been putting out those $1 little must haves.
Yeah, and which I kind of like. You know, if I'm being honest, I feel like the stuff that those like $1 issues are really neat, but it's like some of the stuff that DC has been doing with like the Kamandi project, and then like these one shots that are like with his characters he worked on. I feel like that's sort of more of a fitting tribute. It's like actually doing something with his stuff
and just trying, reprinting it.
Yeah. Then just,
well, it definitely took more work on their part.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like, they've had like a bunch of promotion for all of this stuff, you know, and they've been doing it anyway. But leading up to this and knowing that this Mr. Miracle was coming out, they did like a big, sale on a bunch of Fourth World stuff on Comixology. And even though I've got like some of those things, I have like in multiple physical formats already, because I've got like the big omnibuses they did of like just, I have all the just Fourth World omnibuses, but I've also got some just like various like single issues and trades over the years. But just seeing them on, like, I'm a sucker for those like 99-cent sales where it's just like, oh yeah, I can just get this and like
the whole Newsboy Legion for.
Yeah, and just like enjoy rereading this, like having it with me anytime, you know, just go like, oh, let me just, you know. So I was like rereading some of that, and they put a bunch of that Mr. Miracle in there. Basically like all of his previous old series. I didn't get a bunch of the ones that, I didn't get the non-Jack Kirby stuff. But they had that Seven Soldiers in there.
He was in Justice League International, right?
Mm-hmm. And they had like, but he's had, Mr. Miracle is a character who has had several series over the years. Anyway, but I was rereading some of that stuff, and like there was a Mr. Miracle, Scott Free is not the first Mr. Miracle. Like the original Mr. Miracle was a guy who had that costume, who was just like an escape artist. And his name is, oh shoot, what is it? It's like Thaddeus something. can't remember his last. Just read this and already can't remember.
And he trains Scott like at a circus or something?
No, he like, it's crazy because it's like the first issue, it's so just, Jack Kirby was so great. He's just like, here you go. You're right in the middle of this. It's like the old Mr. Miracle, who's got this guy Oberon, who's like his little small friend, you know, like helper guy, assistant. As they're working on a thing, he's trying to do like a comeback thing. And just apropos of nothing, Scott Free shows up just like where they're practicing, like out in the middle of a field, basically. And he's just like, hey, what's going on over here? Like, oh, you're going to kill that guy. Well, stop, you know, whatever. You know, they end up becoming all friends. And then events happen and he becomes the new Mr. Miracle. But it's funny to think like that costume seems so fourth worldy.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it fits so well with like Barda's and Orion's and all those other characters' costumes. But then it's like, this is just some like, basically like a circus guy's costume.
He wore the same costume.
Yeah. You see a guy in that Mr. Miracle outfit, like, you know, right when in that first issue, and it's like, oh, but that's not the Mr. Miracle we're thinking of.
Right.
And then he just puts it on and it's like, this is my costume now, you know? And it's like, oh, so this crazy outfit's not even from this other world. Cause you see that and you go like, oh yeah, this costume makes sense on that alien world where right. everybody dresses like this. But it's like, oh no, Jack Kirby just makes everybody's costumes, you know, wonderful and outrageous like this. But he just kind of comes across them and is like, oh, I guess I should do, I need to get involved with you guys, you know, and then like some bad guys show up and it's like a whole thing. But that's the guy Oberon is like from that for just, you know, he comes across them, befriends them. And then he's like, all right, you're the new Mr. Miracle, so I better stick around.
And Oberon dies at some point.
Yeah, that's like way later though, because he stayed like he was like in Justice League International also.
Mm-hmm, I thought so. I thought I remembered him.
Yeah, that was like that's much much later. But I and like and now that I'm thinking about it, I'm not sure if that was even. I think that happened somewhere. As like that could also maybe be the kind of thing where they're just like they're alluding to it, and this is the first place.
But we've not actually seen it happen. Yeah, the stuff with Oberon and then him not. Him when he's with Barda and he didn't remember what her eye color was.
Or he said her eyes were, it's like, your changed. Eyes aren't supposed to be this color. There's a lot of stuff where you're going like, where you're reading it and it's very interesting to go like, sort of like, we're used to reading comics and feeling like we're being presented with what's actually happening. Sort of like we're watching it as an, it's like it's being presented to us by an omniscient narrator that's just given us the information of what's happening. And this is like, feels very much like it's showing us something and we're like, oh, I have no idea what's reliable or not.
No, my first thought as I kind of reflected on it was, you know, maybe it was not an attempted suicide, like he succeeded and this is some kind of bizarre after like fourth world afterlife that he's got to escape from. You know, the escaping death will be his big escape trick and maybe that's why things are a little different. But I mean there's some stuff that doesn't fit neatly with that either. So I don't know.
Well, and there's also how familiar are you with the, you know, with the anti-life equation? Darkseid's ultimate goal to find the anti-life equation, which that's like, you know, sort of basically the through line of all the fourth world stuff.
Right.
Is Darkseid trying to find this, you know, searching out the universe, ultimate goal to find this anti-life equation that will sort of like basically... it's not even about like killing everything. It's more like it's
suppressing
about,
the will of everything.
It's basically like, you know, putting everything under, taking away free will. And that was like a big part of Final Crisis.
Yeah, that's what Final Crisis built to. And that, the Green Lantern New Gods and the New 52, they had that Godhead story, which didn't have Darkseid in it at all, but it was the New Gods searching for the life equation, basically, that could counter that, and they thought the White Lantern Kal Rayner possessed the life equation and that whole deal.
But he didn't.
he did but yeah, he did.
Okay. Save us some time. Yeah, he did.
I was trying to think like what can I say about it that would like, yeah, he does. The, whatever that white energy is analogous enough to what Highfather is searching for with the life equation, that right. he could take Kyle's powers and wield it for a time.
Well, see, now I was psyched about that crossover when they first like announced it, and some of the stuff from it looked pretty cool. Even though I was like not completely stoked on how the New 52 had handled the Fourth World stuff. And well, anyway, that's a whole other conversation. But what was, did you read that whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like that was worth the time of the time investment of seeking it out and reading it?
I think it's one of the better New 52 Green Lantern stories. Okay. Yeah, I read all of New 52 and Green Lantern. Some of it was better than others, but that was one of the better stories. It tied in the Sinestro solo book, which is really good. I recommend that to anybody. And it tied in some other stuff. I would say it's pretty good.
Okay. Because that was one of those things where I was like, I started reading it and I was like, oh, I don't know how this, I don't know if I'm going to, because it's basically like treating the New Gods as like the bad guys kind of that story.
Right.
Sort of. I mean, they're in as much as, obviously, if it's like the Green Lantern's book, they're the good guy. They're the protagonist.
Right.
And it's like they're butting heads with the New Gods. And I'm like,
oh. Orion, I mean, correct me. Orion always comes across a bit like a jerk, doesn't he? That's kind of
it. He's very much, he has an abrasive personality.
Yeah.
But I mean, he is a good guy. He's just like very, God of War kind of
right.
vibe. You know, it's just like, I don't have time for all this.
And the way they do, the way they handle Highfather too, it's very much the, I guess, pragmatic, we've got to defeat Darkseid at any cost. So if all these civilizations get wiped out, if this whole planet gets wiped out, but it means I can get that life equation and beat Darkseid, it's worth it.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit like, Odin. You know, in
right,
Thor.
Right.
Like he's handling stuff on a level we can't understand.
He's not worried about our
mortal problems.
yeah. He's like, look, I've got bigger stuff to worry about. But it does make him come off a little bit as a jerk to dismiss sort of what normal people are worried about, sort of like the personal level
right.
problems. But anyway,
I don't know what's happening in the issue, and looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, very, very much looking forward to the rest of the series. Well, and I told you, like, before it came out, like, the day before it came out or whatever, I was just like, I know this is going to be one of those things where, as much as I'm looking forward to this issue, I'm going to hate it when I get it, because it's like, then as soon as I get done reading it, I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, now I have to wait another month for the next issue or whatever, and it's going to just keep being that way for this entire right. series.
Is it 12 issues, have they said? So it'll be one of those where you'll need to sit down and read it all again once it's out.
Well, I'm sure every time a new issue comes out,
you'll
go back and reread all of the previous ones, make sure it's like stays fresh in my mind. But it's like when the stuff is really good like this, I don't mind that at all. It's like every time that I can't just, like, I don't ever feel like I can just pick up Vision where I left off when I like go to read that. I have to start. I'm like that with everything, though, that I think is really good. Like, I can't just, like, jump into
a scene or an issue.
Yeah, or every time I think I want to watch, like, when we were just talking about this, Samurai Jack, when that new season started, I didn't feel like I could just start watching it. I was like, probably need to go back and watch all four of those earlier seasons first. Thankfully, I didn't have time to. Before people were like, hey, we're watching this. Come watch this with us. And it's kind of like I had to just go, all right, I'm forced to just watch it. And it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it was fine. And I'm sure with each of these issues, it would be that same thing where I would go, if I just read it, I'd be like, maybe I would be like, wait, what happened last issue? For a second. And then I would go, and then immediately get wrapped up in it. But also, when stuff is really good, it's easy to want to just go back and...
Well, it's definitely a good sign if you want to go back to it instead of, I don't ever want to see that again.
I need to know.
Because there are definitely comics and shows that I feel that way about.
I really liked it. I mean, in that first issue, but yeah, it's very much a thing of, this is torturous. And it's going to be every time, like, waiting for that new issue.
Yeah.
It's just going to be like, ugh.
It seems like Tom King just keeps upping his game. His stuff just is better and better.
Yeah. I I hope this is going to, and I'm sure this is going to be one of those things where eventually when they put it all together, it'll be a beautiful big book. That's like, just one big, amazing read and like really says something and has a point, or maybe it'll just fall apart. Who knows? Maybe he'll be like, "Ugh, pressure was too much. Sorry, guys."
Yeah.
Just turns into a pie fight. I don't know.
this will be his dud.
Yeah.
They can't all be.
They can't all be great. But anyway, well, speaking of, this is completely shifting gears. And just, I want to mention this, like, while I make sure we have a chance to talk about it. And this is, like, horrifying to think about, almost. This is the 25th anniversary of Wildstorm.
Okay.
And, of course, Jim Lee sold Wildstorm to, used to be a part of Image, and but he sold it to DC back before he became DC exclusive. That was like, whole to do. Anyway, but they, with this being the 25th anniversary, they're putting out like a big 25th anniversary book that's got like a bunch of new stories, for like a big hardcover that's got a bunch of new stories from people who worked on like original important, okay, you know, Wildstorm stuff. But then, like, to go along with that, right now in Comixology, and I'm telling everybody about this, but especially I'm telling you about this, they, well, one specific part, I'll get to it. I'm getting into myself. they're doing this huge, like, Wildstorm sale on Comixology.
Like, right, Wildcats, now. Grifter.
Wildcats, Grifter, Backlash, oh, Lord, what else? Sleeper. Some of the stuff you go like, oh, I didn't even realize that was like a Wildstorm book. Yeah, but like, and a bunch of it is straight up garbage. Do not get me wrong. A bunch of it is like, just like, who would ever want to read this? But they're doing this big sale where I've been like literally for, I don't know how, like probably like 2 years, I've been going like, wait, why can't I get Wildcats on Comixology?
Has, like, it not been on there before?
No. Okay. Literally, like, a ton of this Wildstorm stuff, they is just new put to on. Like, they just put it on, like, this week to go with the sale.
Oh, sweet.
And now it'll be on there, you know, but it's not like then they're going to take it off.
They're doing 99 cents an issue.
Mm-hmm. But they've got the entire. And it's like, I have all of those Wildcats issues. Not only do I have all of those Wildcats issues, there are two copies I'm pointing over to. There are two copies of Wildcats number one just sitting over there in that I found at like a flea market type store. Yeah. April and I were out of town, and it's just like that cover is like such a big deal. Like that first issue of Wildcats just seemed like the coolest thing in the world to me when I was a kid, and like because I love Jim Lee on X-Men so much, and then it's like, wow. These are like new guys, and they're right. Like, you know, and it's pretty dumb, but it's like poorly. It's not great reading.
Who wrote it?
Brandon Choi co-wrote it with Jim Lee. And it's like, but it's one of those things. Every time I see that cover, it is like such a powerful nostalgia trigger for me. And I still think that cover is like amazing. Even though it's just like the team kind of standing Superhero around, pose. But like, man, that pose of like,
Spartan,
who's like standing there in the front. I've like drawn, there's pictures of me like as a little kid, like copying that picture of Spartan. And like, I don't know, I could not tell you a thing about like what Spartan's actual like character is really, like what his personality is supposed to be.
Is he
like,
a robot?
He's like a cyborg. Yeah, android.
It's been so long since I read Wildcats that.
His real name is Hadrian Seven. I mean, I can tell you detail.
There's an alien invasion happening. The demonized.
There's been a thousands of years war between in secret between the Daemonites and the Cherubim. Cherubrium, sure. Something. I think I'm just realizing now, 25 years later, that it's like, it basically sounds like it's like demons and angels, because Cherubrium or whatever. It's like just close enough cherubim. To like cherub. Yeah, and like cherubim or something like that. And it's like, oh my gosh, it took you this long. Like, I'm literally thinking of realizing this. Yeah, just saying it out loud.
I didn't even know what the other team was. I just remembered the Daemonite's name.
The other team. Yeah, but it's bad. It's aliens. And, you know, but it's basically like, you know, the X-Men versus the bad X-Magneto. It feels very X-Men-y. Like 90s X-Men, but just with like a different, instead of mutants, it's aliens.
They've got a really big dude, Maul.
Maul is his name.
Every 90s superhero team had to have a really big dude.
Yeah. I could run down. This is the thing is like, I can tell you tons of stuff about these characters, but it's like none of it is like what it's none of it's like a character. It's just like, this is, it's everything is so surface level.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the badass guy with the guns and like, he's cool. And this is the badass, you know, lady with the sword.
They're hitting all the archetypes.
Yeah. It's just, it's all very like, you know, oh, and this is the rich guy who's like the boss, who's kind of like running everything. And this is the sexy lady who's like, what, you know, and like, this is the guy with knife hands and whatever. None of it's all just, but I was like, as soon as they put it up there, that there's like the banner ad on Comixology, like on Sunday night came up and it had that picture of Spartan, like as
reaching
the like Wildstorm, you know, sale. And I was like, oh, they finally put it on here. And so I was like, I bought every issue of Wildcats. I mean, of that series. And what's funny is there have been several Wildcat series after that that then actually ended up being like real.
Didn't it Alan Moore write Wildcats?
For a little bit.
For a little bit.
Yeah, he had like a little bit on there. That's not on there.
I didn't read that. But.
Yeah, I haven't either. Because it was in that point, like that weird like 90s point where Alan Moore was writing like Bad Rock, Violator crossover and like writing all this like, weird
what
stuff.
What is happening?
And, yeah, like well, and also it's like I was not old enough to like appreciate like what a genius Alan Moore was.
Right.
You know, and like he hadn't started doing the ABC stuff yet, which would then like that was like my real introduction to
Tom
Alan
Strong.
Moore. It was like Tom Strong and like Top Ten and Promethea
10.
And Tomorrow Stories. All that ABC stuff was like, I mean, I knew about some of the other stuff he had done, but it's not like I had read Marvel Man or, you know, or Miracle Man or I'd read Watchmen, but it's not like I got it. I was not old enough to like really understand what the deal was. Like, it's like, oh, this seems, I know this is important. I know this is like a big deal, you know? And I knew he had done some Swamp Thing or whatever, but I was like, who cares? I don't Swamp Thing. Anyway, I bought all that stuff just because I was like, I have to. And I want to read this and just see how...
How it holds up.
Or how awful it is. You know, just... But the thing that I really... And obviously, I would love for maybe you or dear listeners, I would love for you guys to maybe buy like the first issue or two of Wildcats... And then send in your questions, or then we can talk about it next week.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
But the thing that I really, really want people to check out...
Remind myself.
Okay. I'll remind you about this also. Like, the thing that I... More so than the Wildcat stuff. I mean, with the Wildcats, it's like maybe get the first issue or two and just like whatever. But the big thing that they put on there, or the things that they put on there that I think are really worth checking out, and I would love for people to check out because it was like very under the radar. Like, I don't think... Just for whatever reason, people didn't get into it, or it never, I've never heard anybody like really talking about it, is they put all three, and I'd been like going, why isn't this on there for a long time? All three Mr. Majestic series, which the first one was like it was written by Joe Casey, but it was Ed McGuinness's first big thing before he went on to do Superman.
And Majestic's a Superman analog.
Yeah. But when it started... He wasn't owned, you know, Wildstorm wasn't in DC. So it was a very different feat. It was basically like Joe Casey and Ed McGuinness doing these big, like crazy Superman stories that they couldn't do at, you know, at DC because they weren't, you know. And so that's great. But then the two miniseries after that are at DC. And it's like now Majestic is in a world with Superman. And so they've got a very different vibe. You know, like it's totally different take.
Is Majestic still around somewhere?
I have no idea what's going on now. But like those two, because those miniseries were like the first one came out in like it's the first one's like 9 issues, I think, and it's it was like mid to late 90s, and then the second one years later is like in it was like a 4-issue series or something in 2004, and then the next one was like 2005, 2006. And it was like another just 4 issues, but they're all like really good. And the art on all of them is like by, is all really great by people who would go on to be like, Oh, this is what you did.
So it's not Ed McGuinness on all of them.
No. Just did the first one. McGuinness doesn't even do the entire first series. He does like the first six or seven issues. And then I think the last two issues are by, I can't remember. Somebody else who's like, but I mean, the art's still great. And then like, I want to say the second one is like by Carl Kerschell.
Yeah.
Who was like before he got to do anything big at DC. And it's like, art's just great. And it's like Majestic dealing with, that's like in that first one, then like Majestic is having to deal with Superman, but it's like his first thing he runs up against is like, there's like a whole story going between him and like the Eradicator at the point that the Eradicator was, he was like an anti-hero at that point in DC. I would love for people to check those out just as like, cause I think they're like a really interesting one. I think they're good, but two, I think they're like an interesting, you know, different take on Superman, and especially seeing sort of like watching this character be forced to evolve due to corporate machinations.
Right.
You know what I mean? And try like going from someone who's just basically like Wildstorm's version of Superman to now he's in a world with Superman.
So he's kind of something different.
Yeah. And he's like, so it's like, he's kind of superfluous, but it's like, what's, you know, what it's just, they're really interesting. And like, I was so excited to see them show up again. Like I've got the trades of them, but, it was the kind of thing where I was like, I'm excited just to have an excuse to read this again.
Right.
And for everyone to have easy access to this. The sale runs through, I think, through the 28th. I would totally love for you guys to check it out. And then let's all talk about it. Because I want to see what you guys think. Maybe in my mind, I have this like very high opinion of how neat these books were. And maybe it will be one of those things where like going back and reading it now, maybe it won't hold up as well,
right.
But like, I feel like, you know, I feel like I have a fairly good track record for knowing when something's just, like, I've completely recognized that Wildcats is pretty crappy, from a writing standpoint,
right.
But you know, if you like Jim Lee, the art is still,
it's Jim Lee.
So there's that, but I definitely wanted to get into that just to like say, everyone check that out. And then like, let's talk about it next week.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay. But so yeah, let's answer some Twitter questions. @insert Sydney pun asks, why do people roast me about being a quote blue furry when I tell them that Nightcrawler is cute? Matt did a very,
my hands went up.
He did the very like, I don't know. Because those people are not confident enough in themselves to just like what they like. Nightcrawler is very cute. I think he's a cute character. He's like, he's got so much charm and personality, and like, it's like that he's got such an upbeat, good, he's like such a positive person, even though he's dealt with so much oppression and like hatred and horribleness throughout his life.
Oh, he's a fantastic character. Yeah. I don't think he fits in the furry category.
No, he's not even fuzzy, it's not even she's saying that people call her a blue furry when she tells them that she thinks he's cute. And, you know.
Yeah, don't worry about those folks.
Those people are dumb. And plus, you're not blue. Unless you have been painting yourself blue while you tell them about it. Which, not necessarily, well, maybe a little weird. Depending on what setting you're in. But, if nothing else, messy.
There are a lot of blue comic book characters, though. Like
that's, it's a good color.
That's a hue that, especially the X-Men, have so many blue characters.
Blue furry characters.
Yeah.
Yep.
You could do a whole team. Why was X-Men blue, not Beast, Nightcrawler, Mystique, Archangel, all the blue characters?
That's just leaving money on the table.
Yeah. It's not. It's like they don't even care.
Oh, goodness. Sydney had another question. I hope that answers that question, Sydney. And then we'll answer this one, which is completely a much bleaker question off in a different direction. What comic do you recommend as escapism for the desolate hellscape we call Earth? What's a good kind of not think about the world's problems for a little bit, get away?
It's in a way like all comics are kind of escapism, but if you want one,
but if you're reading Secret Empire,
some of them are going to remind you of real world situations. So if that's not what you want something wildly different.
Yeah. What's something that's, it never hurts to get into some of those, really good, Donald Duck comics.
Yeah,
Uncle Scrooge, Scrooge McDuck comics.
Telos
does get a bit depressing.
I'm just thinking, like, because it's
fantasy-based. Yeah,
and like, you're not going to be reminded of, I don't know.
You might be. I don't know. That ending is...
Oh, so we're wanting upbeat, not just to
not like the world. Something to really kind of make you
put a smile on your face.
Yeah.
Squirrel Girl.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You're not going to read Squirrel Girl and not smile and laugh.
Yeah. What are some other fun comics like that? I know these are the kind of comics I love, and now it's like my brain is just completely blanking. I have no idea. I wish we had time for me to just like sit here and really think about it and then cut all the dead space out.
Right.
And it sound like, oh, or just remembered all these. This is going to bother me too now. I'm going to have to go like, because I'll want to go back and like pick out some stuff and then recommend it to you, Sydney. And to everyone else who's listening. What are some other comics that just really... I read and go like, man, that was fun. Or comics maybe you can just really get lost in that are like so engaging that you are not, for just that little bit while you're reading them,
you're not
even thinking about everything that's going on around you. I don't know. Bone's good. Have you read that? Sydney, have you read Bone?
Check it out.
It's really good. I looked out the window and apparently my neighbor's house is on fire. There's like a huge thing of smoke just came across. It looks like it's coming... Not the house straight across. It's coming from off to the right. You guys can't see this.
It's that same cigarette station.
No, you know what it was? I think that I took a like 15-second video of that I'm going to post later. But it was just like, something is not right here.
Something's amiss.
That thing that people are supposed to put their cigarettes out in was vaping. The machine, the thing itself was just vaping. It's like, yeah, I'm not into this cigarettes anymore. I'm just all about vape now. Gotta have my vape. What else? This is making me mad that I can't think of more things. I'm like
G.I. Joe Transformers.
Oh my gosh, yes.
That'll make you forget about the world.
Yeah, that'll make you go like, what a much stranger, more wonderful world to live in. That'll do for now. I'm like desperately looking around the room for my comics. Like, what else is good?
All comics can hit that note sometimes. But yeah, I was trying to think of stuff that's exclusively like, you're not going to pick up an issue and, I don't know. Because you could pick up an issue of Spider-Man and
be like,
okay. Be bummed out. But that's not like the whole tone of the book.
Yeah, that's not the whole thing. So hopefully that gives you something to go on. I'll think of some more later and, maybe I'll post them. I can edit this however I want. I'll think of some and then I'll post in
a place them in there
where it's, and then I go like, oh, now here's a very reasonable list of 15 comics. All right. Charlie Etheridge Nunn asks, what's the best dinosaur in comics who isn't Devil Dinosaur? That is a tough one. Cause then I'm also like, who are some other dinosaurs in comics?
There's a, on,
I wish you guys could see Matt's trying to do his like really serious
Atomic
thinking.
Robo has like dinosaur villain is really so ridiculous.
That raptor that's like
But every line of dialogue from that raptor is like laugh out loud funny.
Does Sauron count as a dinosaur?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean he's a dinosaur kind of man.
Yeah, he's like a pterodactyl man. He's technically a mutant, but whatever. I just think about thinking along those same lines of like a character who, where it's like they have like that. Were you saying that thing about that guy where he's got that line of where it's just every line is something great? There's that line in I don't even know what comic it's from, but it's like one of my favorite panels where Spider-Man is talking to Sauron and he's saying, quick note, we're talking about the pterodactyl man Sauron from X-Men,
not the Lord of the Rings guy.
Where he's like, why are you doing all this? He's like, Spider-Man's like, why are you doing this? He's like, as smart as you are, like you're scientific genius, you could be curing cancer or what. He's like, and not turning people into dinosaurs.
Right.
And he's like, I don't want to cure cancer. I want to turn people into dinosaurs. Like, and I was just like, man,
he's got a singular vision.
This is the perfect like encapsulation of why comics, and specifically this character, is so great. But it's like comics can be so great where you just, because As much as we want to take comics seriously and, you know, talk and have them do, you comics can also just be like silly in a way, and like in a way where it's like, it's silly and ridiculous, but wonderful. And also still like, oh, this is still like this guy is still a grave threat, but he's also like, you know, Richards.
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of thing where it's like Dr. Doom is supposed to be so scary, but he's also so ridiculous. You know, I mean, so comics are great. I'll go with Sauron or maybe like Grimlock from the Transformers comics.
Good call.
He's a good one because you get two for one in that he's also a robot.
Batman's got a whole dinosaur in his bat cave, but that's not really a character.
Yeah, and it's like robot, not even.
But it is kind of weird. Like if you were just to describe Batman to someone sight unseen, they wouldn't just think he's got a dinosaur
They're
statue.
Like, yeah, this guy sounds like he's got a robot, a giant robotronic dinosaur in his clubhouse. His underground clubhouse. So Mike Becker asks, man, and I think we might have a very similar answer on this one, but I'll let you go first. Who is your dream creative team on Superman?
Shoo. A lot of people I would really like have done Superman before.
I only have one answer on the art side.
It's Chris Somni.
Yep. Could be wide open. On the writing side. I mean, I've got people that I would like, but Chris Somni on Superman is A number one on my list.
Right.
But
Immonen's already done.
Immonen's
already done.
Superman. He did that whole big run in the 90s. Yeah, but it's like his style was completely different then. And he was writing it too.
Mm-hmm. His style has changed a lot. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, he could also so easily go back to that style. Like
what he's doing now on Spider-Man, like to see Superman done that way would be really
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of a writer.
But he also did Secret Identity with Kurt Busiek, which is like one of the best Superman things ever.
Yeah.
But again, it's like a totally different style from how he does. It's like not a big action thing. It's like more realistic.
Chris Bachalo done Superman?
I don't know.
Wild looking.
It would be wild looking. That's for sure. He would not be on my list, but
he might surprise you though. He might.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, and it's not even like I dislike him. He's just not like who I would want to put on Superman.
Yeah.
Like I really was, you know, I really enjoyed that Doctor Strange he was doing with Jason Aaron.
Yeah.
But it was like that's, you know, not a fit I would put for Superman. But that's totally my personal preference.
Steve McNiven done Superman.
I don't know. I'm not a big fan.
Well, so what
I don't
about
dislike
writers?
Him.
Writers that you
I don't dislike him, but the only Superman that Somni has done so far is that one issue. It was the first issue of Adventures of Superman.
Yes.
With Jeff Parker.
I did read that.
And that was like such a neat, like little, you know, one-off thing. I would love to see Jeff Parker have a shot on Superman. I mean, ideally. This is the thing, though. Like, every page of the New 52 Action Comics, which was Grant Morrison, every page of that, I was just trying to imagine how Chris Somni would have drawn it.
Yeah.
So, I would love Grant Morrison and Chris Somni to work together on something. He's done so much with Mark Waid at this point that it's like, even though
And Wade's done so much Superman. I'm trying to think of someone who's not done Superman before, like a classically Marvel writer or something that would.
I would love to see what Jonathan Hickman would do with Superman.
Oh man, or
the wistful Superman look in Matt's eyes when I said that.
I know people were throwing around that he should come over and do like Legion of Superheroes.
Well, that's like he said that's his dream book is to do Legion of Superheroes, and it's like, well
come on now,
come and do it. I just don't want it to be like, I hope if that does happen, I will be very excited. But it's like, I just hope against hope that it's not like with Jim Lee drawing it. You know how it seems like they feel like they have to put Jim Lee on some of these things where it's like whether he's suited for a book or not, just because it's like that's going to get people to pay attention to it. It's going to be a big his name sells comics. I get it. But it's like that Superman Unchained with him and Scott Snyder.
You didn't like that.
I don't think Jim Lee is a good fit for some of DC's stuff. I didn't like Jim Lee when he and Brian Azzarello took over Superman after Hush.
It's a kind of a weird story too, but you didn't like the art.
It's not that I dislike it. I'm like, it doesn't seem like the right fit. And I didn't think he was great on Justice League for the start of the New 52. There's some stuff I just like for me, Jim Lee is not a good fit for. And it's not saying that it's bad. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm not crazy about his Batman. And I know people love his Batman. And I'm just like,
we just have to agree to disagree.
Well, I'm not saying it's bad. It just doesn't, it doesn't do anything for me in that same way. Like, well, that was the thing. It's like, okay, so have you ever read Broken City, which was the Batman story that immediately followed Hush?
Azzarello and Eduardo Rizzo. Yeah.
I felt like that was like a bajillion times better than Hush. And like, I just reread it recently and I was like, man, this is still great. But no one talks about it because it was just right after Hush. Mm-hmm. And it was like,
it was six issues.
Five, 6 issues. Yeah. And it was like such a perfect, like good little story. Introduced some new things, had like twists, felt very like, very much more like, sort of like a more, I don't know. I don't want to say realistic, but it was sort of like a more realistic take on Batman, especially coming from like the big comic booky bombast of like right. how Hush was.
I remember it being jarring because Jim Lee had Killer Croc and Hush being this big monster and kind of deal. And then on the first issue of Broken City, Killer Croc's like mobstery kind
yeah.
of guy.
He's still a big gross guy, but it's like, he's not a dinosaur.
Yeah, that's my favorite dinosaur in DC is Killer Croc.
I'm sure there's dinosaurs we're forgetting. Yeah, who are some other writers?
If you had asked me a few years back, I would have loved to see like Bendis take over and just see, I mean, how would
just
he
see what he does
a DC book. Yeah,
it'd be interesting. I know it's not going to happen because of a number of reasons, but some of the best Superman comics, and we've talked about this, but it's like some of the best Superman comics of the last like 20 years. Or no, are like those Superman Adventures issues that Mark Miller wrote.
Yeah.
And it's like, if he could do something like that, like imagine, I would love to see some of those issues taken and just redrawn by like not a cartoon, like a animated series style artist and just treat it like, oh, no one read those. Let's just do like...
You probably could.
And people would go like, wow.
So we may have already talked about this because we spent a lot of time talking about Hitch's Justice League. But there was a long time where it seemed like Mark Miller had a pitch for like to take over the regular Superman book that he wanted to do with Brian Hitch.
Right.
And that never happened for whatever reason. And I think Mark Miller's moved on. He's doing his own stuff. But I wonder if that opening arc on Justice League, it was such a Superman-centric story. I wonder if that was it, or maybe elements of that was
it. Especially that it was like suddenly he's going to be writing it.
Yeah.
You know, that he was
like, I wonder if that
whole concept of like
Ra'al coming and because it was a Justice League story, but it was very a Superman-centric one.
I think to be fair, it's like most Superman, like, it's like, I remember Mark Waid saying once, it's like when he was writing Kingdom Come, you know, he thought it was just telling like a big DC story. And it wasn't until like, you know, maybe like halfway through it where he realized, he's like, oh no, this is a Superman story. And it's like everything in DC is kind of, if you're doing like a big, I mean, if you're just doing something that's focused in on like one little person in some small town, you know, or if you're just telling a Batman story, it's a Batman story. But once you've got like the Justice League involved or something, it's all kind of a Superman story. Mm-hmm. But I say that in a good way, not in a, like he is the only thing you can focus on, but it's like he is, you know, he's your main dude.
But yeah, I said all that to say, I was always curious about what a Miller Hitch, because this is right after the Ultimates, and what a Miller Hitch Superman would look like. But I wonder if we've seen it. I wonder if that's what that was, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm curious. No, that's going to, I'm going to be very I'm going to like go back and want to reread that and just go like look for sort of like Miller hallmarks.
I think it's got him.
Yeah. Now that you're saying that.
Because I read it through that lens.
I'm thinking about it now, like some of that stuff. Well, we could talk about that another time. again, that's like a whole other fun thing. Real quick, this will be our last one. At Joe Tips, Joe Martini asks, what's your take on the current Batman storyline? I don't mind dark stories, but this being a past story, it just doesn't feel right. Now, we planned on talking about some Batman stuff anyway, but you were going to get into... You've been reading like even further
back. I'm not current on Batman because we may have talked about this last time. I did a deep dive on all the Batman family books I missed during the New 52.
A deep dive on stuff that didn't need to waste your time on.
Some of it was good, and then some of it was like, well, at least I read it, I guess. But because I was really getting into, Tom King's Batman book, really getting into Detective Comics, and it's like, if I don't go back and read the Batman stuff I missed from New 52, I'm never gonna.
If you don't read it now, it's like, this is your only,
And they ran a sale on Batman Eternal and Batman and Robin Eternal, so I'm like, so I got all of that, and I just...
I don't trust any of those weekly books, like, the, you know, stuff that's like...
Oh, man.
It's just so much filler.
And so I read it. I read it all. I read all 52 issues of Batman Eternal and 24 issues of Batman and Robin Eternal. We were talking to each other.
All through that, you were kind of like checking in with me about it.
Eternal was a lot of filler. It did not need to be that long. And so I think you could do a super cut of it to get it all the way down to just 6 or 10 issues and still get the meat of the story.
Right. Instead of 52.
Or like if there's some really cool stuff you want, there's some cool stuff you could include, but still have it under 20 issues.
Yeah.
And which as I'm thumbing through it and thinking, you know, so over half of it being filler, that's inexcusable. But so it does have some fun moments.
You said 6 or 10 issues. That's like 85%.
Well, I'm saying like if you wanted to include every cool moment that happened, because even in a lousy issue, there'd
be
a cool moment.
Even if you cut it down to like a 12 issue thing.
Yeah.
That's still like 75 for whatever, you know, like however much.
The percentage isn't great. but you get to see the inner workings of the Gotham Gazette.
Oh, boy.
and all the political violence.
Finally.
So anyway, it was pretty lousy. I think they learned their lesson, and Batman Eternal was half that length. Or Batman and Robin Eternal was half that length. And I did like it better, but it was still, unless you're a huge Harper Row Bluebird fan, you don't have to read it to be able to know what's going on.
But you said for her, it was like a...
If you're Harper Row's number one fan, or she is an important character to you, don't sleep on Batman and Robin Eternal because it's really important part of her backstory and who she is and how she got there.
I think Joe's question was more about maybe the Tom King stuff that's going on right now.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
No idea.
I've read through Monster Man, Monster Man.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Man, so you're like right on the verge of getting into some of this like really awesome stuff. But I think he's specifically talking about the War Jokes and Riddles because it's like all flashback.
Mm-hmm.
Without spoiling anything... I'm kind of into it, but I'm also, I think it's going to be one of those things where I kind of, it's all going to depend on how it plays out, how it pays off. If it all kind of comes together, I can go, okay, there's definitely been some good stuff in it where it's like individual moments or like the Kite Man issue where we learn like the origin of like the one-off origin of Kite Man issue is great. And really goes like, look what he can do with like any character. He can take like this meaningless character and like do something with him. The stuff's great, but if it falls apart, you know, or if it's like, it's all really going to depend on how so far we're like, I don't even know how many issues into this. And it all feels like, and it, part of this is because of how the story is being told. Because it's basically like this story happened years ago and we've just never heard of it.
Yeah, this is the year two. If there's like this zero year, year one, this is year two.
This is basically like what happened. Batman's just like fresh from year one. He's been doing this for, but he's telling this whole thing to Catwoman, like as a flashback. It's all like, and the way they're doing it, it never feels like anything is, so far, it's like, even when stuff is happening, because of the way it's being told is this like flashback, it doesn't feel like anything is happening. Hmm. It feels like you're just kind of going like, you're seeing flashes of what happened, but not actually seeing it happen. Does that make sense?
So they're probably 4 issues in, and that's
4 or 5 issues.
That's a lot to not feel
and
like
it feels like
meat yet.
Nothing has happened. There's like, and it's not like the story is bad, but it's like, I'm super interested in the story and like the premise and like wanting to know, and the way that it's been set up, I'm like, okay, what happens? You know, like what, like, but it never, so far, I haven't read the newest issue, which came out like last week. I haven't read that one yet. So maybe that one's the one where it's like, oh, everything falls into place.
I've not seen that kind of feedback.
Yeah, I haven't seen anyone going like, wow, it really.
But he's going to have to pull it all, do something to make it justify all those issues of
It's setup. Gonna have to like really all come together and like feel like, but so far it's all just been like, it feels like it's, you know, been like 4 or 5 issues and it all feels like stuff that should be like the first issue. Even when there's like, there was one whole issue dedicated to this like period where it was like basically, and this is not like spoiling anything, but it's like, there's basically the issue before last was just an entire issue of Deadshot versus Deathstroke.
Okay.
And with Batman kind of caught in the middle trying to stop them. It's presented sort of as like, this was like an epic whatever, but you don't feel like, none of it feels like it's happening. You don't feel like you're, the way that Batman is like, the writing, it's literally the writing style, and then the art that's going along with it, even though the art is very good, it feels like you're just kind of seeing like, you don't feel like you're seeing it happen. You feel like you're seeing like pictures in the newspaper of this thing that happened and someone's telling you about it. Kind of.
That's an odd way to tell the story.
Yeah. It just, it never feels like anything is happening. And also the fact that it's like, you know, it's a flashback and you know that, you know.
Is there like a framing each issue or it's,
it's not each issue. It's like just sometimes through, I mean, it's not like framing, but just throughout it, sometimes they'll cut to a scene of like Batman and, or Bruce and Selina, you know, like hanging out.
And he's telling her the story.
And he's talking to her about this. Or sometimes she'll be like, what happened on that day? You know, not that. But, you know, it's like, oh, anyway. So that's that. I don't know if that answers your question at all, Joe. But maybe we'll talk more about it. Maybe by next week, everyone will be caught up on everything. And we can talk more about all this stuff. But anyway, I think that's going to wrap it up for now. And thank you guys for listening. This has been fun.
Yeah.
I wish we had a little more time, but unfortunately, we do not. Because for a change, I have to be somewhere. Normally, it's you've got to get out of here, but this time it's my fault. And I spent way too long talking about Wildcats. thank you guys for listening so much. All of you that support the show on Patreon, cannot thank you enough. Everyone's still got even more stuff. I just sent a ton of stuff out in the mail, but everyone's still got more stuff coming. Thank you all so much for that. Patreon.com/TheChrisHaley. Check that out if you want to support the show. Even just $1 is like super helpful. Or if you want to get some stuff in the mail, you can do more than that. Whatever. Quick note, check out Patreon.com just to hear, get the notice about how bringing back the Gravity Falls Gossiper. And you can listen to the first episode of that on there for free, even if you are not a supporter. Follow me on Twitter @TheChrisHaley. Follow Matt on Twitter @XAMattDrain. All of this stuff will be in the show notes. Thank you to everyone who has left a review on iTunes. If you haven't and you like the show, please do that. It's super helpful. Tell a friend. There's no advertising or anything of any kind on here because that's not what I do. So it's just word of mouth. Spread the word if you like the show. All that kind of stuff. Matt, you got anything you want to plug to people?
No, sounds good.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for hanging out with us talking about comics. We'll see you next week, and I'll just leave you with this. Once I start talking, it feels like starts off normal.
Your voice is,
and then starts getting yeah.
It's bad. You can fix that in post-production easily.
Oh yeah.